Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, returning with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. No co-host with me today, I'm afraid, due to the rather frenetic way this week's show was put together, but hopefully plenty to learn and plenty to entertain your listening ears. FA Vars semi-final this weekend, so we talked to one of the managers involved there, and a slight deviation as we talked to somebody involved in data analysis and the collection of the latest data and stats on player movement within a game and within training that hopefully will give an extra little edge to their manager and to their teams. This season may be nearing conclusion, but there are many unanswered questions and many more twists and turns to come. So without further ado, let's get matters underway. So let's start with the FA Vars. Last week we found out one of the finalists. This weekend we will learn the second. With Warrington Rylands beating Hebburn Town last weekend, we already know that there's going to be a new name on the trophy. But whose will it be? Our next guest takes his side to Warrington Rylands on Saturday to hopefully guide them to Wembley and have a crack at the final. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, manager at Walsall Wood, Mr. Darren Byfield.
How are you? You okay?
I'm good. Now, Darren, as a kid, we all dreamed of running out at Wembley. You've previously been there as a player, but I sense the desire is possibly stronger now as a manager.
A lot stronger, definitely. Obviously, I'm grateful and happy and that I played at Wembley. It's a great thing to have. But to take a team there and manage there definitely trumps it. It really does. It wins all day long because you're now looking after 17, 18 players and staff as well. So it'd be a great, a better feeling if we were to be victorious there.
Yeah, and away day ahead of you on Saturday, a club have beaten the holders last week, so are probably favourites. They've been getting plenty of media attention too this week. Does that help you with your preparations?
It doesn't really affect us. They've done what they feel right for them. You know, it's great getting someone like Wayne Rooney in there, I suppose, to help them. And they'll try every little 1% they can do to be victorious on Saturday, which they should do. They're well within their rights to do it. But it plays no part with us. We just go as we normally do and try and do everything that we've done in the previous rounds. And hopefully we get the same performances that we've had in the previous rounds. And we hope that we can get the win and then hopefully get ourselves to Wembley.
Yeah, and talking of those preparations, because of Hebburn's progress, you had to sit out last weekend after you've been having around a week to keep you going this season. So how did you guys feel last Saturday?
Yeah, well, what we did, we played a friendly against Hensford Town in the morning. We played that game and I gave the ones that haven't really played that much, had their minutes. I gave them a game, and then I got myself over to Warrington to watch them play.
So you've done all the training notes and everything like that. You've experienced the highs and lows of the game, both as a professional player, well, a non-league player, a non-league manager, and a professional game coach. You've got oodles of do's and don'ts to share, and I'd imagine plenty that you'd love to share as well. But how do you impart that knowledge? Because unfortunately, I think we're both of an age now where some of those that you're coaching probably won't know about your career or even the names you played alongside.
No, it's funny because every other week they come into football and they're like, oh, I didn't know you did this, I didn't know you did that, I didn't know you played with him, and you laugh at yourself because I'm probably old enough to be a lot of their dads. So but the thing is this, the biggest thing is not about me and my career, it's about me trying to pass on, as you say, the good, the bad, I mean, different really, and try and make sure they don't make the mistakes and that I did, or can they learn quicker than I did? That's all it is, really. And I've got a very, very good group. Now, the thing is, whether we win or lose on Saturday, I know these boys will give their all. And that's all you can ever ask from a team. And yes, we would be gutted, but that's the same as Warrington Rylands. They'd be gutted as well if they don't make it. So, to win the game would be unbelievable. But I would also, if we did win, I'd still have to report for the opposition manager. And I'd think it'd be likewise if they win and we lose. They'd be, you know, a little bit disappointed for us. But you want to win the game.
Yeah, it's because of the world that we've experienced in the last year and a half. It's such a weird competition this year. I mean, we all love the Vars anyway because it's probably the most open competition that all the clubs competing have an opportunity of getting there to Wembley. But this year, it's been your focus of the season, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. As you say, with the pandemic, it's trying to put smiles on people's faces. So, you know, for us, not last week and the weekend before when we did get through, it was great purely for the fact that we not only know we're putting a smile on people's faces, but it's the first time we had got to the semi-final of the Vars. So the boys have created history. Now, that doesn't mean we want to stop there, but we know we've got a very good team in our way and we're going to have to perform to the best of our capabilities to get through that round. So, yes, it's been weird. Probably a lot of the teams are not as sharp as they would be normally because they'd be playing a lot of games and be so much fitter than they are now. But both set of teams are looking and thinking, look at the reward if they get through. So everyone's going to leave everything on that pitch come Saturday.
And talking about putting smiles on people's faces, there's the added carrot at the end that 1,500 fans of each club at the final for the FA Vars will be able to go there and experience it.
Yeah, definitely, which puts more pressure on both managers and players because I think that the thing is this, with it, it's so funny with the semi-final because anyone that you speak to on the Waterwood side, like, oh, Wembley, 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 you're like, whoa, hold on a minute. No, it's the semi-final. And it would be the same for Warrington. Everyone, the Warrington side will think, yeah, they're getting through, and the Waterwood side are going to think the same because they just think it's the norm. No, three teams don't go through to the final, so... It's one where there's a lot more pressure on you because people automatically think you're going to win the game and get there. But I think the managers are the ones that have to keep the level head and cool and be calm and let the players know, look, you're going to have to dig in this game because it's going to be a tough game for both teams.
Yeah, just briefly away from the big game on Saturday. You're at Northampton Town now by day as part of this professional player to coach scheme to encourage more black and Asian coaches into the higher level of the game, which is a great scheme. And it looks like it's actually, you know, grabbing the headlines for the right reasons. But we could probably do with more help like that at non-league level as well, couldn't we?
Yes, we definitely could. I think with this scheme, it's so good because it gives you the opportunity to go in and learn and listen and be the best coach that you can be, best manager that you can be. But I think if they're setting the standard now, I hope it does filter down and the non-league look at it that way because there are so many good coaches out there. And obviously, we still want the best coaches to be getting the best jobs. But there's a lot that are qualified that aren't getting the chance. So I think with this game, the PP professional player coach scheme, that you've got a great chance of getting yourself in there and showing them what you're all about. So hopefully it does filter down into the non-league and we see more black and Asian coaches coming into the game.
Yeah, it's good that you're getting that experience at both levels as well. And I won't reel off all the clubs that you've played for because you've got a game on Saturday. But you spent 5 years, I think, as a player in non-league and similarly now the similar length of time as a manager. And I've read that you've admitted over the years that you've had to change as a manager to adjust to the needs of a non-league player. And at this level, coaching is important, but it's probably how you manage your squad that's probably the biggest impact.
It's definitely the biggest for me. That's one thing. If anybody asks me what have I learned the most out of managing, I've learned more about myself and how I should be and how much more calmer I should be and more understanding I should be. These players, and it's not just in the non-league system that I'm talking about. I'm talking about a professional league as well, going into Northampton. You have to understand what these players are going through, the pressure put on them. Also in non-league, these players are going to work and then coming to train and playing matches. you have to be, you know, you've got to look through their eyes and understand that it is hard. And what they don't need straight away is managers and coaches shouting at them. And for me, I think that's where I definitely look at myself, and I'm so much more happy that I'm a lot on with the players, and they know I'm their biggest cheerleader on the side. I'll kick every ball and head every ball with them and run with them. But when it comes to letting them express themselves, they know I'll let them do that all day long. And if they make mistakes, unless it's not a silly mistake like trying to do kick-ups or a cross turn in our box. But other than that, they know I'll leave them be and let them get on with it.
And I think it says a lot as well about that you're still coaching at non-league level as well as being part of this programme. And also Northampton Town recently appointed John Brady, the former Brackley Town manager. I know him as a player at my club, Hayes, back in the day, Hayes and Yedding now. It shows the importance of non-league all the way through the pyramid.
Yeah, it does. You've got to look at some of the players that have come through non-league. And I don't mean just like the recent ones like Jamie Vardy and so forth. I mean Ian Wright and Les Ferdinand. I mean, there's a lot that have come through non-league and playing the game. And if that's the case with players, there's the same with managers. I think Chris Wilder was one. I'm not sure 100%. Yep. I think he was. So there's a lot of very good coaches and managers in non-league that want to be the best that they can. So, and, you know, they're getting their chances. But we definitely know that there's chairmen and managers that are looking into non-league a lot more now. You look at the Cowley brothers as well.
Yep.
They've done so well. So, we'll just keep going, and then you hope that someone notices all the hard work that you're putting in and you get your chance.
And you say about that hard work. Yeah, hard work as a manager and hard work as a player. Particularly this last year, I guess that's probably tested your managerial abilities to the full. Yeah, I guess plenty of online fitness planners and video workouts.
Well, for the players, it's funny because I believe that the bars will continue. So I had them posting their videos through the lockdown. I've been going back like 2-3 times a week doing their running sessions. Obviously, I can't control all of that from where I am and where they live. So I just kind of like said, boy, if you're putting them in, you're posting it regularly. When we do go back, it won't be a running session, but if I don't see them, then we will just have 2-3 week pre-season where you're just running. So I think that worked because they did actually post their video. So fair play to them. And regardless of what happened Saturday, they've done so well because their discipline and their attitude was spot on with making sure that they kept up their fitness work.
Those dreaded running sessions, they're the ultimate threat to a non-league player or any football player. It's been a long season, albeit without too many games, but has the squad altered much since it began in this competition?
No, I think it's something that needs to be changed is there's, because of the lockdown, what happens is you can still register, so players from step one down to step five, you can have players playing for both teams if you want. So what happens now is anyone that's played in the FA Trophy, which is from step one to step four, could still play in the FA Vars, which is from step five downwards. Now, I think that's silly because what we found out was a few of these teams have signed step three players to play in these games. Now, I'm not here saying that we haven't done anything. We signed at one player because we were short. We had the opportunity to sign a few more, but we just felt you have to be loyal to the players that have got us to where we were at the time. I can't remember which round it was. But there was teams signing 4 or 5 players, and I thought that was unfair, if I'm being honest. So we've only had one player that come in to try and help us out. And I actually spoke to him and said, look, I won't be starting you. And the only way you probably will is suspension or unfortunately, an injury. So that's what happened. He's just come in and he's been brilliant for us. And he's another cheerleader where he encourages the team and he's speaking on the side. He's so good, really good. And that's Tom Tonk, who was at Alvechurch. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, actually, I think he might be. Yeah, Alvechurch was Tamworth, I think. No, Tamworth, sorry. Is that Tamworth? Tamworth, yeah.
And
so, yeah.
But you weren't tempted to find sign us form late on to get yourself on the bench there.
I actually did. I thought no.
To cover injuries. To cover injuries, clearly.
I need about 10 because I'm not good enough. I wouldn't do it now. No chance. I know I'm having a joke there. It's all about the players. And the funny thing is, I used to watch, you know, when you watch relative coaches on TV and the Premiership, and they're talking about how happy they are with the boys and delighted for the players, and it's not about them. I used to sit there and think, yeah, whatever. You know it's about you. You've done this. You've got the team going. Your recruitment. But honestly, I know this is like miles away from the Premier League, but you get the feeling of the same thing. It's never about you. You just want the best for the players. And I would love them to go to Wembley and do something I couldn't do, which was win there. So it would be great. So we have to concentrate on this game Saturday. But no matter what anyone says, everybody's got it in the back of their minds that Wembley's just around the corner, 90 minutes plus injury time away.
Yeah, I suppose one blessing is that you're only effectively 1 week away from Wembley as well. So we won't have to see any dodgy suits lining up at Wembley to get through.
Liverpool.
Yeah, no creases. No, it would just be,
as I said, we don't want to look there, but you do. It's the norm. It's no one being overconfident and arrogant. It's just you're thinking, oh my God, we're so close to Wembley. But we know we've got a very, very tough game because we're trying to beat the holders of the FA Bar, and they're a very good side.
Yeah, well, we spoke to their manager last week, and I think he's probably got similar thoughts to yourself. And probably whatever the result on the Saturday, you'll probably be the amongst the first two to commiserate, congratulate, and whatever.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, 1,000,000%.
I think it's clear from talking to you and to Dave last week that you're in it for the right reasons and you're enjoying the competition and you're enjoying non-league. And to be frank, we're enjoying having you back on the Non-League Football Show. Thanks for joining us, Darren, and best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Now, many clubs are already looking ahead to next season and pre-season two. In the modern world, it's all about gaining that little extra edge. I'm hopeful VAR won't make it down to the non-league level, but there are plenty of pieces of tech that hopefully will begin to filter down to our level of football. To tell us about one such piece of kit, former Hayes and Yedding United, Farnborough, Bedfont and Bedfont and Felton manager, and now we're player data, old friend of the show, Mr. Gary Haylock. Welcome back, Gary.
Hi, Tim. Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's always a pleasure to see your smiling face as well. I would say I had years of seeing you smile, but I'm not sure that you were always smiling. But I've always known, ever since we first met, I've always known that you've had an interest in and knowledge around the science of football, not just the on-the-field stuff, but stats and everything around that. How did all that first come about with you?
It was money, lack of it, to be honest. At Hayes and Yedding, we had very, very little money, and it was trying to find different ways of trying to get an edge. I tell this story so many times. We had a very grumpy secretary who kept a tight rein on all the finances, to Bill Gritt. And I always remember one of the first meetings at Yedding trying to get it passed to pay £50 to video the games. And he flatly refused. So it was a waste of time. You get another player for that. And it took about 3 months of doing it. Because I reduced the budgets, released a couple of players, got it in, and it was fantastic for us. And at that time, we were the only team in the Conference South filming games. And I know that FC Video now are doing probably 8 or 9 clubs. They're linked in and to many different leagues. And I keep saying to the guys that they should give me a share of the business because I was the one that started it. They went from doing weddings to doing Conference South games. And it made a difference. And you were always looking for something that that could give you just that little edge because we couldn't compete financially. And it's kind of, I think, is it necessity is the mother of invention? And that's always been the key. Times of goals being scored, different data points, looking at, there's loads of different things you can do. And I've done a lot of courses on it. And this, the player data thing is just the next kind of stage, to be honest.
So player data, what is it that they do?
Well, I think everybody must have seen the vests that the players wear. In the Premier League, they and most football league clubs, they wear they look like sports bras, and they've got a little tiny chip, kind of unit in them. And what it does, it measures, it's a GPS unit, and it measures how fast they run, how far they run, how far they run at different speeds. And it's used then to calculate load. I did the air license in 2013, and we had a whole module on it, the ones that the FA were using, which at the time, they cost £3,000 each. So I went to look at it for Exeter City at the time, and we would have needed £60,000, which, to be honest, was never a runner. But that's changed a little bit. But what it does, it gives different data points that you can then use. It's said that every single major action in a football match is preceded by a sprint. You never, ever see anybody score a goal walking, very rarely. To get into a position, they've got to sprint. And so I suppose I'll ask you the question, what percentage do you think of a player's time on the pitch? Does he spend stationary? What time percentage of his time does he spend walking, jogging, running at pace, high intensity, and then fly out sprinting? And unless you know that, you can't coach for it. And so it gives managers that kind of that level of information. And I always say that if you look at what the best clubs are doing, the clubs with the most money, look at what they're doing. Because they've got the most money, they tend to spend it in the right ways. It might take them a while to get there, but every single top-level club has a GPS system, and they measure the player's sprints and what they do so that they can then manage the load in training so that they get the most out of their training sessions.
So they're not just stats that give Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville some talking points on the Premier League coverage, then?
Well, they do, but I think if you've got a sports science guy or some kind of an analyst, to be honest, managers, I've got right into it, and I know I've been talking to Miguel Rios at Watford now, and I've got a general idea of how far people run in games, in Premier League games, what the high-intensity sprint is, what the speeds of the sprints are, and you can adjust your training off it. I'm actually at a session now with a combined counties team prepping for a game on Saturday, and we've just done our sprint session. And I know exactly the distance that they've done because I know exactly what distance they're going to need to run on Saturday. And hopefully it makes the training more effective, especially with non-league clubs. You only have two sessions. You get maybe 4 hours a week. Of that, you've got warm-up and match prep. So your actual physical preparation work, you need to get the most out of it. And if you can do that, then you train more effectively. Hopefully over a period of time, makes you a better team.
So it's a training aid rather than a match analysis aid then, is it?
Oh, both, because you weren't in training. Well, you weren't in matches. So, for example, there was a player at Ascot United a couple of weeks ago who ran, I think it was 11,300 metres. Of that, 342 of it was at a high-intensity sprint. And I think he did 18 high-intensity sprints. So we knew then that that's kind of, and over a period of time, you build up and you get that, you get a benchmark and you get an average. So say that that is his average. So we know he's going to make 18 high-intensity sprints through a game. And he's going to recover a distance of 342 metres. So then you can prep that. So it might be that if you've got a game on a Tuesday and a Saturday, you can adjust your training on the Thursday to make sure that he's getting the practice at those kind of levels so that those sprints that he makes, hopefully he'll make them a little bit quicker. Use it in games to benchmark and then in training to make sure you're doing the right kind of training.
So I guess ultimately it leaves no hiding place for players who are either intentionally or maybe unwittingly not getting involved.
I'd like to think that those kind of players, I know I played with a few when I was a little bit younger, those kind of players are not in the game anymore, they always are. But what you'll find as well, psychologically, I'd be quite interested. I think we're going to try it at some point where we put a vest on a guy and put the unit on him and then don't turn it on and see what happens. And I guarantee you, if you think somebody's watching, then you're going to try a little bit harder. And if Big Brother's watching you, which is effectively what it is, then you would like to think that they'll push it a little bit more.
All the measuring, that bit sounds easy. Wearing a vest, I think even someone of my ilk can probably wear a vest if I can get it over my head. But what about the interpretation? I'm thinking having a fully operational PC workstation on the bench on a cold, wet, windy Tuesday evening at Barton Rovers, that's probably a little bit ambitious.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, to be honest, that's exactly what player data have kind of come to that same conclusion. And so it's so easy. There's only 8 metrics. I've done the Talent ID Level 3, and we had somebody come in from Opta talking about what the Champions League teams look at. And there's something like 250 different data points that a player has that they look at a player and assess a player on. And you need six full-time staff, PhD mathematicians, all of that to interpret that kind of stuff. we've played data. It's a maximum of 8 different metrics, and you can even pick out the ones that you want. So even if it's just those ones that I just said to you, you're going to cover 11,500 meters. You're going to do 342 at a high intensity sprint, and it's 18 different sprints. There's heat maps as well. There's heart rate involved. But you know, you can have that 10, 15 minutes after the game. And those are very, very simple ones to work off. And you can build up and do more and look at the, there's 5 different levels of sprint that it measures. Although the walk-in and the stationary one is usually about between 70 and 80% for every player. So you're only really looking at about 30% of the game. But it's, to be quite honest, the app and the whole thing has been built for simplicity because it's aimed at clubs that can't afford a full-time analyst, that can't spend a huge amount of time on it. And it can be done literally within an hour of the game. You've got all the details, you compare it to the previous week, and then you can get an idea then of the distance covered. Now, it's not going to turn somebody into Cristiano Ronaldo, but it's another little thing to add onto it. And like we said before about the video analysis, now every team's doing it because it's seen as something that's essential. I'll be perfectly honest with you, in 5 to 10 years' time, every club at Conference South will have these units, and probably every club at Ryman Premier, because the price has come down, they're affordable now, and when people start using them properly, somebody will get some success off the back of it, and all of a sudden it'll spread through the leagues.
And I guess it's not just for individuals as well, because if you've got heat maps, then as a manager, you can possibly overlay that and see, you know, if you're not using the full width of the pitch, or, you know, if there's a certain area of the pitch that the play seems to be clogging up, maybe, or something like that. It just gives you another insight, doesn't it, into the way the game's been played.
Yeah, it's another data point. I mean, like the video analysis, the view from, I mean, you know, I used to do, whereas I used to stand on top of the stand at Farnborough because I always wanted the overview. I filmed a game recently with a drone and looked at it from the plan view, which again, it just, you know, and any one of these things is not going to make a team of world beaters on its own. But if you start to add in those 1, 2, 3%, and you get 4 or 5 of them, all of a sudden you're 15% better team, and that can be the difference between playoffs and not going up or staying up. Or, you know, there's, when you get into the margins, it's only the little small ones. You know, if there was something that would make a team 100% better, everybody would do it because that's easy. It's trying to put the little things together, and this is one of those. And at the moment, it's not being used by Conference South teams below that. Some of them have it. I've spoken to a good number of managers. There's one Conference South team that told me that we've got them, but we're actually getting rid of them because we don't use them properly. And I have to say, I had to bite my lip before I started to laugh out loud. You know, because if you've got it, then you've got an idea of what the benefit can be. Why not use it properly?
Yeah. Now, you've played and scored in the Football League, I think the Irish League, the Northern Irish League, Greek League, European competitions, and English non-league. Even with all this new tech, though, have the fundamental requirements of being a good striker changed in those years?
No, not at all. Not at all. But what I would say is people have got fitter. What's happened in the last 10, 15 years is our knowledge of physical conditioning has got better. And so now you can't play at different levels without being at a certain level of fitness. You just get found out. You know, I remember being at a football league club that's in the League One now on trial, and we trained Monday, Tuesday. We went out Tuesday night, went out all day Wednesday, came in Thursday. Everybody wore a plastic bag, sweated it out, and then you trained Thursday and Friday and played Saturday. And it's, you just can't get away with that now because, you know, you look at what, the Premier League teams are doing. Urine tested every morning, blood tests every week. It's, you know, the amount of, I keep saying to people, you cannot play in the Premier League without being in superb physical condition. It's just not possible now. And so I think the physical conditioning has got better, but now it's looking, I think, the little bits of technology and the psychological side of things are the areas where there's going to be growth in the game and where things are going to change and where teams are going to get an edge. And if you're not moving with it, then you're standing still, which is almost the same as moving backwards.
And of course, the average age of a non-league player, I'm sure the latest bit of tech is going to wow them and get them interested immediately as well. I mean, if anybody is listening and interested in learning more about what you can offer via Playdata, is it affordable for a non-league club?
Well, I recall a player. I had a player. I won't mention his name because he'd be embarrassed. But he played for me in the conference national, £75 a week, which is, what's that, £300 a month. For 20 units, it costs £300 a month, £15 a unit. And there are discounts to be had for different kind of lump sum payments and extended contracts. But £300 a month for 20 units, I'll be honest, I've put it out there and I've had a lot of interest, but I thought there'd be more. It's been a little bit slower. I know that I would have let a player go to get this thing in. There's a fantastic support from system from the company themselves. They've got six or seven guys who just all they do is analyse the data for clubs. There's all kinds of extra packages you can put on there, but the basic package will give you a wealth of information that, if you use it correctly, will give you a competitive edge.
And if people want to find out more from you, how's the best way to get in contact?
I'm on LinkedIn. I'll give my email address, but I don't suppose anybody will be ready to take that. HaylockGarry@hotmail.com, two R's in Gary. But I'm on LinkedIn, I can go straight to the company themselves and just kind of say, I'm kind of the London-based representative. There's two or three others around the country as well. And then it's starting to go further. And we're now starting to get into other sports as well. I spoke to a hockey team today who are really keen. And I think other sports will start to get more involved in this. It's, like I say, something that is going to add a certain level of percent. And the early ones, they'll add more percentage than, say, 3 years' time, because it's going to get to the stage where if you don't have it, you're going to be lagging behind.
Mm-hmm. And as you said at the opening there, I do remember you trying to convince everybody about the value of video, which was ahead of your time, perhaps, maybe. But now, away from player data, you've been a manager. You've mentioned, you know, in the conference at the highest level of non-league. You've also been a chairman too, briefly, for a while. Are all those days behind you now, or you're there coaching in the combined counties? What's next for Gary Haylock?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I've thrown my name in the hat for a couple of jobs and not got interviews for them. But I got to say, if I now went for an interview, I'd be interviewing the club. I'm at the stage now where I've got lots and lots of different things going on, and I don't need the hassle of being a manager. And unfortunately, I have the opinion that it seems that anybody who owns a football club or is the chairman, they get sent on a course to make them idiots. Which won't endear me with a lot of chairmen, some of the chairmen that I've worked with. But I don't understand how people can be so intelligent in business and so stupid in football. I was on the pro licence with Gary Rowett when he got sacked by Birmingham, and Gary Bowyer when he got sacked by Blackburn. And it just, you look at some of the decisions that have been made, and it's like, how can you make that kind of a decision? A friend of mine just got sacked at a League One club after, I think, 3 months. You know, you go on all the courses and they tell you it's 18 months to build a culture, or 2 years to get really get yourself in. And the average life of a manager in the Championship is now less than a year. It just doesn't make sense to me. And I'm not sure that I'm prepared to put time, effort and energy into something when, I'll be honest, I love the game, but the industry is just, it's ridiculous. So I'm not sure. I'll be honest, if I got the offer of a really good job, yes, I'd definitely take it. But I don't think those kind of jobs are... They're very, very rare, very rare. And I was lucky enough to work at Exeter, which is a fantastic club. It's just the other end of the world. Once you've been spoiled by a really good club like that, it's very hard then to accept other clubs and the way things operate. You know, clubs that have got four or five managers in 2 or 3 years, it just doesn't seem to be worth the effort, to be honest.
Well, I guess we'll just have to keep you on as our data scientist expert. And it's always a pleasure to get you on, Gary. We'll leave you to go and continue that training session, and hopefully speak to you on the Non-League Football Show again very soon.
Brilliant. Appreciate your time, Tim.
Time of the week then to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers, and a welcome return to the show to senior writer there, Mr. David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Good, good, good. Very pleased to get you back on the show as well. It's been a busy old week in non-league. I'm not sure how we're going to cope when all the clubs are back playing too, as well. It's so much going on. Let's start with the playing stuff, I guess. National League looks like it is going to go to the wire now. Sutton United back on top, 1 point ahead of Torquay, and 3 games to play.
Yeah, going to go right to the wire, I think. Obviously, interesting weekend. coming up with Sutton playing on Saturday at Maidenhead and then obviously Torquay playing against Stockport on Sunday. So it sort of almost drags things out a little bit longer in a sense of where things will stand. But obviously at this stage of the season, another pivotal weekend. And then if we sort of jump ahead a little bit, you've then got Sutton against Hartlepool on non-league finals day on that same Saturday. So that will again be a really big fixture in the title race. But yeah, good to have such a exciting finish really to a National League season. I can't really recall one that has probably been this sort of close going into the final few games. And that's the same actually with the playoffs, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we mentioned that the two clubs there, Torquay and Sutton United, as if it is a two-horse race. And I think it is. But then you mentioned that the game on Sunday and Torquay having to play third place Stockport. I mean, could there be another twist yet?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You probably looked at the table after Tuesday, after Stockport had drawn, and probably thought their sort of title race had been run. But, you know, if Sutton were to lose on Saturday and Stockport were to then beat Torquay, you'd look at it and think they're right back in the mix and probably the sort of team in form almost after that result, if it was to go like that. So, yeah, I mean, you know, only three games left, but at this stage of the season, you do get those sort of twists and turns. But we have actually seen it in the last couple of weeks where it's sort of been in Sutton's hands and it hasn't been. Then now it's back in Sutton's hands. You know, they sort of almost edged past Woking in the end on Tuesday. You know, it looked after their early goal, it looked probably sort of for all the world then that they might go on and score three or four against a Woking side that have now lost nine in a row. But, you know, they really sort of pushed them all the way and sort of with the final kick of the ball, you know, Woking could well have equalised. So, you know, it just goes to show that probably at this stage now, anything can happen. And, you know, and also if you slip up, it could be fatal.
And you don't want to slip up either with the way the playoffs run as well. Obviously, if you don't win the title, if you can make it into the second or third spot, that's probably a good thing because you have one less game to play because the eliminators are brought into play as well the weekend ahead, I think. So it is going to be a battle for position as well to get home draw or one less game to play.
Yeah, we have generally sort of seen that second and third place do end up in the final playing each other. Haven't we sort of over the years since the playoffs were expanded? So it is important for Torquay and Stockport to nail down that second and third place. But obviously, Hartlepool will be trying to do their best to get in there as well and play that to have one less game to play in the playoffs and home advantage as well, which is obviously important over one leg. So yeah, very much. Crucial for those clubs to keep going right to the very end, but you know, with even so, there's still opportunity for the likes of Stockport to end up winning it, and you know, in the event of Sutton and Torquay slipping up somewhere down the line, so
yeah,
you know, all to play for.
And with it being so exciting as well, it's great to know that the denouement of the season. I'm trying to make it sound even more exciting than it maybe is, but it's going to be in front of fans. The National League games from Monday to be played in front of a limited number of fans and home fans only.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, good news. Obviously, the government's roadmap out of lockdown is on track, and that's meant that fans can start to attend these games, which is a nice little boost for clubs and also their supporters, really, of, you know, some of which won't have seen their team for you know, a year or the best part of a year. So that'll be nice. Obviously, that, you know, these clubs are all ready to welcome fans back. Some of them did so in around Christmas, but you know, they'll have been waiting for this moment and we'll be ready, and yeah, hopefully I think goes smoothly when fans return. And of course, you know, it'll be the same for non-league finals day next weekend as well, which, you know, we always sort of hoped that would be the case for that final. But obviously, it has gone true for them. So, yeah, that'd be a nice day at Wembley with supporters, because that was probably the thing you really sort of missed, that first non-league finals day a couple of weeks ago.
Indeed. And looking ahead, we mentioned Sutton and Torquay head-to-head may go down to that final weekend. The irony being that I think both of those sides are away on the final day of the season. So if they do win the title on the final day of the season, they won't be in front of their own fans.
Yeah, and also I think Dave Anderson's going to be playing quite a big part in the title race, isn't he? I think Barnett are playing both Torquay and Sutton, I think. Sutton are at Barnett on the final day, aren't they? So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and he's always been very proud of his friendships with Gary Johnson and the lads down at Sutton. And I just hope that those friendships aren't called into question when whatever the results are called there. You mentioned the Wembley finals, of course, on the playing front this weekend as well. We've got already know one FA finalist with Benfield's penalty win at US Portsmouth, which was quite dramatic last weekend. But Warrington Rylands against Walsall Wood battle it out this Saturday for that last spot at Wembley. As you mentioned, the clubs are going to be allowed some fans in at Wembley when they finally get there, but it is a limited number of people, isn't it? I know the small village of Binfield have been celebrating. They've only got about 8,000 people live in the village, I think, but I think those the 1,500 tickets that each of those clubs are going to be allowed are going to be snapped up probably friends and family of the players.
Yeah, I should think so. Those tickets will certainly be sold out by the time the day comes. Obviously in a 90,000 capacity stadium, it does sort of seem a little bit like a drop in the ocean. But sort of from what I heard from the FA Cup final between Manchester City that was played recently, that they had fans. You know, I think it. You know, from people who were at Wembley that day, and the sort of journalists there did say it sort of really made an impact having the supporters there. So, you know, I think it is a shame really that there's, you know, not a few more thousand that'll be there for non-league finals day, but, you know, at least those who are there, I'm sure they'll make their presence known. And, you know, both teams will certainly appreciate having those fans in there.
And I think as well, because the game will be televised for those that can't make it to the game, and I know there's always a lot of neutrals that love watching these end of season finals. But I think that it'll make a difference on TV as well, just to see a few faces in the crowd, and also that different buzz that you get when there are fans within the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I say, I think the impact. It has been missed. You've been to a lot of games behind closed doors, right from that very first playoff game at Boreham Wood last summer. And sort of right from then, you sort of really notice the impact, you know, times when there's sort of a cross comes in and it flashes across the goal mouth, and there's not sort of an ooh or an ah from behind the goal. You do really sort of notice it. You know, and particularly it probably all sort of came to a head really almost at that non-league finals day a couple of weeks ago, when it was sort of a very sort of dark and dingy sort of horrible rainy day really at Wembley, and just sort of the voices of the players and managers sort of echoed around Wembley with a few sort of shouts of encouragement from the Royal Box, from those sort of club officials that were there. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully this sort of now marks the return of fans back at football and also the country sort of getting back to its normal self, really.
Yeah, you mentioned non-league finals day a couple of weeks back, where we saw Concord Rangers so proudly walk out at Wembley Stadium. This week we learnt that Chairman Ant Smith and manager Danny Scopes are set to leave the club.
Yeah, a really massive shocked hearing that news. Certainly didn't expect it. In all of the sort of build up, you know, we've done pieces with Concord and Danny Scopes, there's certainly no indication that this was sort of on the horizon, or any sort of indication, you know, even after that trophy final and the press conferences afterwards, Tim, that, you know, you were there for as well, that you know, that this was going to happen. I think Ant Smith has sort of said he's stepping down as chairman. He's still going to have some involvement in the club there, but obviously he's been an amazing servant for that club for 21 years. taking them from Essex Senior League up to National League South. I remember, you know, speaking to him for a piece not too long ago when the Cowleys got the Huddersfield job, and he was sort of saying that as a chairman, during their time as managers at the club, it was basically a case of him trying to keep up with what they were doing on the pitch, because each year they were sort of winning a promotion or there was something else that they were achieving, and he was sort of in the background trying to get the ground grading sorted and bits and pieces like that. And he was sort of even saying then that you know, they were still sort of playing catch up from that time, and you know, certainly the ground improvements that they've made at Concord over the years has certainly come a long way. So that'll be a big loss to Concord, because you know, Ant Smith wasn't just simply chairman there. He sort of did every single job. I remember going down for the Royston game in the trophy last year, which was actually then postponed on the day for a waterlogged pitch. And he was basically out there with the roller and having been out there since about 5 a.m, I think. So, you know, it was not just sort of chairman by name. He's done every sort of role there is. So that would be certainly a big loss. And obviously Danny Scopes then, you know, following him, again, is another surprise. You know, Danny Scopes obviously, you know, goes a long way back with the club. You know, joint manager with Danny Cowley, and sort of when he first started there, obviously came back last season to sort of steady the ship, and I think probably get some of the sort of identity back into the club that they'd been talking about. Obviously, took them to the trophy final as well, an incredible achievement, and sort of pushed Harrogate all the way on that day. So yeah, certainly didn't see this coming at all. You know, I don't know sort of what sort of happened there, but you know, whether there's, you know, been things going on behind the scenes, I don't know. But even then, that would be unusual for a club like Concord, and for a chairman like Ant, and for someone like Danny Scopes as well. So yeah, big shock, and very much a changing of a guard there, sort of in all aspects, really.
Yeah, I guess it's a bit like if you're a musician and you have a number one single, maybe that's the time to step down when you've made it to Wembley for the trophy final with an unfancy club. Maybe that is the time to step away. Yeah. In other news this week, we also found out that Ebbsfleet had appealed basically to the FA to try and get their place back in the National League. There's a vacancy, obviously, in the step one division, the relegation that they suffered last year on was it 0.01 points per game, and they looked at the rules, and yeah, I'd looked at the rules as well, and I think it's another one of those situations where the rules are always open to interpretation.
Yeah, it does seem like that, actually, doesn't it? I think you hit the nail on the head there. You know, fair play to them for trying and giving it a go, I suppose. You know, you've got to probably challenge and sort of ask these questions. You know, I think if you're going down by, like you say, 0.001 of a point, that's, you know, incredibly sort of difficult to take. And, you know, particularly going out of a division like the National League, you know, non-league's top flight, and, you know, really sort of established league now with a lot of professional teams, effectively a professional league. Yeah, that's significantly difficult to take. And then, of course, when you can't earn that place immediately back the very next season, which is then curtailed, you know, it's difficult. So, yeah, they've tried to do it, but have not had any success. So, yeah, I think that's sort of the line drawn under it, really. You know, now it'll be just back to trying to do it on the pitch next season.
Yeah, and talking about on the pitch next season, there was some good news at the end of the week, this week, hopefully. The Premier League's latest broadcasting deal, meaning there's £100 million to find its way into funding pots. Not all of it's going to come down to the non-league game, but hopefully the majority of it will, via Football Foundation and other routes that will help the game at our level.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you're always initially grateful when you see this sort of sums of money coming down sort of from the top, you know, but then sort of perhaps at the same time, you always think, well, the television deal probably is a few billion pounds and you're getting sort of 100 million of that. Is that sort of almost You know, what should happen? Should it be more? But then at the same time, it is £100 million. So maybe you should be grateful that you're getting anything at all, really. And you'd probably say, well, what sort of problem is it to sort of the Premier League for sort of, the non-league clubs, I suppose, some people might argue. So, yeah, it is good news, and sort of we all wait to see how that money is filtered down. I think there can always be more done, but like I say, sort of who am I to say that sort of more money should be coming in, really? But I think that's probably, there's always sort of a mixed reaction to these sort of things.
Yeah, and it's always a concern for me when they announce there's money coming down, but it's not actually announced how it's coming down. Like we had the similar thing with it, didn't we, with the loan system and that was announced for the winter period, and it just took a long time for people to understand the system. Talking to people that have applied via that system, I'm not sure they still understand the system. But at some point there will be some benefit to the non-league game, and of that, yeah, as you say, we should be grateful. So plenty to be reported on this weekend. Anything else we can expect to read in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, so we're previewing the latest non-league finals day. This year's non-league finals day, which surely takes place next Saturday. So I've spoken to Binfield managers Carl Withers and Jamie McClurg, who you got to know last week, Tim, before their quarter, before their semi-final tie, which, as you said earlier, they won on penalties. So good to speak to them. I've also spoken to Brandon Hall at Hereford about their run to the trophy final, where they'll take on Hornchurch. And we also have reaction from Hornchurch too. Of course, we don't actually know who Binfield will be playing yet in that FA Vars final, but we'll have the semi-final covered between Warrington and Walsall Wood. We've also got a nice tribute in there to James Dean, who very sadly passed away this week. The popular former Halifax and Chorley striker. I've spoken to Tom Baker, who played with them both at Halifax and Chorley, and then signed him at Trafford later on in his career, and also Neil Aspin, who was the Halifax manager when he was there. So really sort of sad story, that one, and will be missed by a lot of people in the non-league game, and of course his friends and family too. And we send our best wishes to his family as well. So nice tribute in there on Sunday for him. There's plans for a game to be put on somewhere later down the line, when hopefully Halifax's Shea Stadium can sort of really be packed out with supporters and fans and family and friends and things. And sort of the idea is to sort of have an old boys game between Halifax and Chorley, some of his old teammates and managers, to raise some money for his family and make sure his legacy is remembered, really. So that'd be really nice if that comes together, and I'm sure it will. Discussions have already been going on between Halifax and Chorley, and Tom Baker is very much a part of that, having played for both clubs and known them well. So hopefully we've done justice on Sunday with that piece, and there's lots more in there this weekend as well. Steve Hill, Chester fan, returns with his weekly column about not going to football matches, which is hurting him a lot, I'm sure. But lots in there again this weekend, building up to what promises to be a really sort of busy week next week, when we've obviously got non-league finals day, the penultimate day of the National League, and some allocation news as well from the restructuring. So it's all going to be going on later this month.
Thanks again for your insight into the news this week, and we look forward to reading about the rest of the stuff in this weekend's newspaper. So thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Cheers, Tim. Thank you.
So that's it for this week. Thank you to all of our guests and for all of you for listening, whether you may take in these sounds. And please do let us know if you're listening to somewhat far distant land. We'd love to know how far our reach goes. Thanks to David Richardson again for the non-league paper roundup, and make sure that you do pick up the non-league paper on a Sunday morning, because it's always packed with information, news and views from the non-league world. You can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Myself, I'm there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. Plus, of course, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Spotify, on Amazon Music, Castbox, Deezer, iHeart, GeoSavin, Listen Notes, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Public, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites, if there's any more that I haven't listed. Stay alert, stay safe. Thank you and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.